Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Tuesday. It is the 25th of May, 2021. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Kelly. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're with me today. We are here to talk about the iPad through the ages. all the way back from the point when people went, yeah, you know, Apple's trying to make this like great big iPhone, but they want to call it iPad, which is the dumbest name. So it's never going
to
happen.
I sense an opportunity for me to take another victory lap. I'm like, I'm becoming the high school quarterback in his 20s who wants to keep reliving the big game. I said before the iPad was announced that Apple would compete with netbooks with an iPod SuperTouch.
Okay.
And the important bit being there, not that I predicted that Apple would release a larger form device like the iPad. It's that I said Apple would compete with netbooks. Because at that point, the constant narrative was, what are you going to do about netbooks? What are you going to do about netbooks? What are you going to do about netbooks? And Apple would always denigrate the netbook experience without denigrating the market need that was being filled with netbooks. And they kept talking about things like how people are already doing a lot of netbook-like things on iPhone. And so I wrote a column saying that Apple will compete with netbooks with an iPod SuperTouch. And I was entirely and 100% correct, and I am still very proud of that.
Well, of course you are. I mean, aside from from the Newton and all that, like from previous Apple dabbling in like personal information assistants or whatever they were called at the time, we got the iPad in 2010, and the first one did not have a camera, didn't have Touch ID.
ID wasn't a thing yet.
Right. There was no Touch ID at that time in 2010. And it was the A4 processor. And they were, it was the 30 pin connector also as well. You know, the old iPod connector that we think about. The second generation did come with a camera. So that was a thing. That was at the time, that was sort of the biggest, that was the biggest obvious change. Obviously it came with a different processor. They've kind of all upgraded. Like every time we got a new one, it was because it was getting a new processor. It had a front and a back camera, which at the time wasn't really a thing. Like it was a big deal that they had added the front camera also to the iPad for FaceTime and what have you. That part I think is pretty interesting about the beginning ones. Now, Brian, did you have one of these early ones?
I did have one of the early ones. I remember in 2010 speaking at CatMac in Austin. They met the Austin Mac user group.
Yes.
Just ahead. It was after Apple had announced the iPad, but before the device had shipped. And one of the things I was going to talk about was this thing that Apple had announced and everybody was sort of looking forward to. And I remember saying very specifically that the Apple has no idea what we're going to do with this. Like they're releasing this product without knowing how we're going to put it to use. I mean, it's, you know, kind of like with Apple Watch, right? The original version of Apple Watch is not the version of Apple Watch that Apple pitches today. And And that was very much the case with the iPad. Apple just had no idea what developers were going to do with it. They had no idea how we were going to use it. They didn't know how it was necessarily going to fit into our lives. And my feeling from the outside is that Apple was very, very, very okay with that. Like they were that Steve was fine with the idea that you know, we'll figure out how to use it and we'll figure out how we want to make it part of our lives. That there's just the again, that market need that was being addressed by the rest of the industry with netbooks was a real need. That need to have something small, light, extremely portable. That didn't have a big footprint in your bags, and that everything was going to work out just fine. And it, if that was the actual sentiment within Apple, they were correct.
Yeah. You know, that was the thing that I thought was interesting about it when it was announced was, there were a couple of sort of example cases of it. Of like things that people could do with it, but they didn't really talk about like, look at all the stuff that you can do. If you were to buy one of these, and that was the thing I thought was sort of notable about it. Just to give people a comparison of what hardware looked like at the time. The iPhone 4 came out, right in that neighborhood. We got the 3GS. This is still when they were coming out in the summertime. So the 3GS came out in summer of 2009 and the iPhone 4 came out in summer of 2010. So right in between those was when we got the iPad. And so it's definitely a much different device than it was when they rolled it out. I think we can say that about both the iPad and the iPhone at this point, as far as what they do, much like the watch, like you were saying before. I think that all three of those have evolved dramatically since they started.
I don't think iPad was envisioned as a computer replacement.
No.
When it was announced, and today it is increasingly, even though Apple actually, I don't think Apple talks about it this way very much, but it is becoming ever more a true computer replacement for more and more people. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been for years. It was a computer replacement for a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, we got the ad. What's a computer out of that?
Yeah. The short-lived ad.
The irritating ad.
that didn't go over.
It didn't go very well. We did get it. And I know a lot of people who have upgraded to an iPad from a really, really old machine, sometimes an old Mac, a lot of times an old Windows machine, depending on what people were trying to do with it. You know, if what you want is basic internet functionality and you want more screen than you have on your phone, but you don't really have a need for a whole entire laptop, then here you go. And I think that that's had a lot of appeal for people. Overall, I think over time.
Yeah, I think it has. And if there were the two biggest developments for iPad were probably the introduction of the iPad Mini and the introduction of the iPad Pro. And I think that both of those are probably even more important than the introduction of the iPad Pro 12.9-inch models. Mm-hmm. The larger models. The iPad Mini made it so portable and made it so easy for someone to just, you know, pitch it in a bag and roll. And mm-hmm. also made it easier for people who lay on their back to read in bed. Mm-hmm. Which was one of the very interesting things to me. Like I was always very, very happy with the 9.7-inch model, which is today's 11-inch model. Mm-hmm. But I was always very happy with that as my reading device. It was like perfect for me. And then Dave would always talk Dave would talk about how you know, that it was too big and that he much preferred reading on the iPad mini. And then at some point, like months of this went by, and at some point I asked how he would read in bed, and it turns out he's a reader on his back. Mm-hmm. And I'm a reader on my side. So I'm not holding my larger iPad up.
There's the difference.
And I like that form factor for the 9.7 inch because it's closest to a hardback book. Mm-hmm. Right. So we're all different. And this is like, this, yeah. I mean, if these ideas were playing out in other people's heads too, I would imagine that more often than not, it was playing out subconsciously. Mm-hmm. But that introduction of the mini, I think, really filled the perfect void for a lot of people. And then the power of the Pro filled a void for yet more people.
Yeah, I think it definitely expanded it. And I think what I'm hoping, this is actually an opportunity where I have, in fact, put my money where my mouth is. I'm betting on the upcoming WWDC, and specifically the announcements of what's going to come to iPadOS now that there's an M1 processor in them. And the reason I say I'm putting my money where my mouth is because as soon as we were done recording yesterday's show, my M1 iPad Pro showed up at my house. So,
oh, congratulations. Yesterday.
Yesterday, yes. Finally.
I'm still waiting for mine, so that makes me, let's see, let me check my color here, green.
So I'm excited about it because I haven't had a ton of time to spend with it, but everything feels like it goes as fast as I want to. I'm not having to wait for anything. And also the part of the reason I wanted to pull the trigger on this one is because I was going to get an iPad Pro anyway, because I use it for podcast editing, not this show. We don't edit the show, but on others. I have a couple of other shows that I edit, and when I edit them, I like to do, there's an iOS app called Ferrite that I like to use for that. And so I use that on iOS to do my audio editing. And so I wanted something that was going to be high powered and have a lot of battery life, all that sort of stuff. So I put, I was going to pull the trigger on an iPad Pro anyway. And once they announced the M1, I kind of went, well, I guess that's what I'm doing. So what I'm hoping is that iPadOS will continue to evolve on its own track. And I feel like this is one of those things, Brian, that you and I talk about all the time, where what it seems like Apple is doing doesn't make any sense. And then we get down the line a ways and we look back and go, oh, of course, that's why. I think, and this is just my own theory, and remember, I run a home for Wayward Crackpot Theories. I think what happened is Apple split off iPadOS when they realized that they could take the Apple Silicon that they were going to put in laptops and start putting it in iPads. And once they had a whole lot of horsepower in an iPad, they could really do something with it. And I think that was the moment when it was sort of a signal to the rest of us that they were taking the iPad seriously and did believe that it was a different sort of device, and that they were finally listening to people who were iPad first, who were figuring it out, who were, like our own Andrew Orr, who is iPad first, and a lot of other people who, like, this is their primary computer and all of the kind of stuff they want to do with it. And like the limitations that they're bumping up against are software limitations, not hardware limitations. So it's my hope that will change.
What's the other way around?
How do you mean?
What if the decision to split off iPadOS is what put Apple on the path of releasing a laptop class or a desktop class processor in the iPad?
Oh. I never thought about it that way.
You're probably right. I mean, but I because I think that the decision to split iPadOS into a thing, mm-hmm. and not just have it be iPhoneOS was being very much driven by the way people were using iPad and the way Apple wanted to encourage people to use iPad.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm sort of thinking out loud.
I love it.
You mentioned it from the standpoint of like now we've done this. Hey, maybe we can put a big processor into it. I think really it might have been like, you know, let's embrace this. Let's embrace iPad being a completely different device than iPhone. After all, we used to say, let each device be true to itself. And that was why we don't have a toaster fridge, right?
Right.
Tim Cook said that. I can't remember if another executive said that. Tim Cook said
toaster
that
fridge. Yeah.
Numerous times. Let each device be true to itself.
Yeah.
And I can see someone going, well, why don't we take our own medicine here? You know, the iPad is not an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an iPhone. And there are different things you can do with it, with that bigger display.
Yeah.
But there's also different things that people want to do with it because of mindset. So let's make it its own thing. Hey, wait a minute. If we're making it its own thing, let's just stick a desktop processor in there. You know, like we're already working on this whole,
you know, let's
Apple
take it seriously.
Silicon thing. Let's take it seriously.
I like that idea. I like that too. They both lead us to the same conclusion in this moment, however, which is, Brian, that you and I each bought an M1 iPad Pro, and we're really hoping that that iPad OS in a couple of weeks is going to just blow the doors off anything we're doing now. This is my very fond wish. I think this is going to be my fondest wish since what used to be my fondest wish is not going to happen anymore, which is Tim Cook coming out on stage with a giant stack of paper and saying, this is iTunes source code, and then turning to his left and feeding it to a wood chipper, which is still the thing I really wish would have happened, but never did. But they did finally break up managing your phone on your computer and the iTunes stuff. So it's a tiny bit better, and I don't anticipate that happening anymore. But I think this might be my fondest wish now, is that that iPad OS continues to evolve and continues to mature, I think is the word I'm looking for, that it will become more capable now that we have the possibility. And I think the iPad is where a lot of the horsepower is going to be on display. Even if you don't have an M1 iPad, I think there's a lot of stuff that you can do with the processors that are in the other ones that we have that are all awesome, by the way. Like the A-series chips that are in those other iPad models are all fantastic. And
yeah, I've got the current iPad as my daily driver, mm-hmm. iPad Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And the previous generation iPad Pro is sitting on my desk waiting to be sold, LOL. And but by the way, if you're in the market for a now 2-generation-old iPad Pro, just let me know. And
you can reach Brian at observations@macobserver.com. Yes.
Yes, you can. And my point is that both of these devices are fantastic devices. I do have an M1 iPad Pro that's supposed to be in a week or two sent mm-hmm. to me. Again, green with envy. And but the current device and even the previous generation device, they're fantastic. They're very, very powerful.
Yeah, and we've talked about it before, that the regular iPad is something you can recommend now, and it didn't used to be, and that the iPad Air is a really nice machine, and the iPad Pro is a super duper nice machine. You know, great tool for the job, but for a long time it felt like the regular iPad was sort of not fitting that bill. And now it is. I think that it definitely holds its own against everything else. And
the entry level iPad is also a fantastic device, and it's a fantastic device for surfing, for writing, doing homework assignments, for doing email. Even doing light video editing and light photo editing, it is a very, very capable device for not a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's the thing, is it's just sort of finally caught up, I think, with the other devices that were out there. Like, we were just getting, you know, more horsepower in some of the other ones, and now it seems like it's a lot better, and I'm excited about it. So I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. Brian, I know you and I will both be watching the keynote with interest, which, mm-hmm. as we noted yesterday, will be at 10 a.m. Pacific time on the 7th of June, officially kicking off the week of WWDC, which is going to be all online again this year. And we have more details about the schedule. I'll make sure that there's a link to that in the show notes for those of you that can see them. And that's going to do it for us today. Brian, thanks so much for joining me to look back on a decade of the iPad.
Indeed. Thanks for having me, Kelly. Good to be here.
It's been a lot of fun. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.